Okay, I guess I need to share my screen. There you go, Yvette. We're ready whenever you are, Yvette.
I don't know if she knows we can't hear her.
Hi, Yvette, can you hear us?
Okay, I'll try texting her.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Carrie, we can hear you.
Okay.
Oh, we can't hear her, but she can hear us.
Something wrong with her microphone. She probably needs to disconnect from the headphones she's using.
Sheila Thornton just texted me, said, we are all on but can't communicate with you. I don't know what that means.
That means that she's not a panelist. That means if she, Sheila, if you want to say something, then you need to raise your hand. But as a panelist, you will not be able to speak until it's time. So now I can allow you to talk, Sheila. You are now unmuted.
Great, thank you. Okay, so we were just trying to figure out whether we were listening in on meeting. We weren't supposed to be here. So I'm here from One Future. Kim McNulty and Jackie Trico are all on.
Okay, thank you so much. We should be proceeding shortly.
Thank you.
Andrea, can you hear me now?
We can hear you, Yvette.
Okay. All righty. So let's start the meeting. I call the meeting to order at 12:08 p.m. Is there a motion for an approval of the agenda?
I motion to approve.
I second. Is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes from the December 8th meeting?
I motion to approve.
I second. We'll move on to public comments. At this time, comments from the audience can be made on items not listed on the agenda that are of public interest and within the subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has the policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on the agenda when it comes up for discussion and or action. Are there any public comments at this time?
Yes, there are. Heather Rycona has a public comment. Go ahead, Heather. We have a couple public comments, actually.
Thank you, Andrea. Am I unmuted? I think I am.
We can hear you.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. Thank you. And hi, everybody. Happy New Year. We wanted to call in just quickly. There's myself, our colleague Mike Walsh from the Riverside County Housing Authority, and Miguel Romero Ochoa from Assemblymember Garcia's office. that wanted to comment together. We have been grateful for the last couple of program committee meetings that we've participated in with the healthcare district regarding our soon to be launching housing fund and the possibility of the district making a catalytic investment. And we wanted to check in just to share some updates that over the holiday break, we actually gained some tremendous traction and momentum, both with the Department of Finance and the Treasury, with the leadership of Assemblymember Garcia and Assemblymember Mays. And as part of thinking about potential investments from the state, one of the things that that's caused us to think about is, given some of the feedback around the potential difficulty of structuring a 0% investment from the district, in our conversations with the state and the Treasury over the holiday break, it's become clear that there's an opportunity for 0% funding from the Treasury at the state level, which would likely change or cause us to change the nature of our request to the district. The most catalytic, it appears that the most catalytic investment the district could now make in the fund would actually be grant dollars, which seems to be easier given the feedback from the healthcare district. But I'll pause for a second. I want to see if Andrea, if it's okay, if Mike Walsh and Miguel from Assemblymember Garcia's office just sort of weigh in as we're sharing an update.
Go ahead, Miguel.
Hi, are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. Hi. Happy New Year, everyone, and good afternoon. As was said, my name is Miguel Romero. I'm a field representative with the Office of Assemblymember Eduardo Garcia. Joining in on support and the request that's being made by Lift to Rise. Over the last several months, our office, along with our counterpart, Chad Mays, Assemblymember Mays' office, have been working with Lift to Rise to really try to bring in investment to our region. And we're realizing, as we're working a few different avenues, one through getting us some requests for some dollars in the state budget, but also working with Treasurer Ma's office to try to get some further investment in the region, that the most useful thing that we would be able to receive from the healthcare district in terms of dollars would be these grant dollars. So we really want to join in support of that. And this is a terrific opportunity for the healthcare district to really gauge the opportunities in the intersectionality between housing and health. So want to join in that request, and as always, make our office available for anything the healthcare district needs in the future and in this new year.
Thank you.
Mike, did you want to speak? You have the floor.
I think Miguel and Heather said it well. I just to emphasize the taking the feedback from the program committees and also with district council and others about some of the difficulties of the original structure. And basically in the conversations with the state is like, how can we leverage local investments for much larger dollars that would be coming from the state. So this is just a check-in. We're going to be getting more information in the days to come, but want to just provide this committee information on what has been taking place so you're aware that we can move forward. But that's all I have. I hope everyone has a great day.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment at this time? Andrea?
Sorry, no, I don't see any other hands raised. Thank you.
Okay. So we'll move on to old business. We'll move on to funding request schedule. I believe the information is in the packet if anyone has any questions. Now is the time to ask. Does anyone have any questions? Hearing none.
Hi, I had some questions, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Give me a second, because I always run through this. We are talking about page 6, right? Yes.
Page 6 through, I believe, 10.
I had a question. You're going to be giving us more information in the foundation regarding your comments on the CVAG grant. Am I right?
We could, but this was more just an update that kind of left it where it was. So there wasn't really too much more to update than what is in this schedule. Unless I saw Greg was on the was as a participant, so maybe when that time comes, he might be adding something for homelessness.
Could I ask you to share with us what whoever you were speaking to, their response to your second bullet point regarding the Bobby Poppy assessment and our comments about discontinuing efforts to create a formal collaborative structure?
Well, we shared that with Greg Rodriguez. This was a meeting that we had with Greg Conrado and I and Megan and the grants team. And that, you know, that was one of our concerns as we spent over, you know, $54,500 on this assessment with Barbara Poppy, and that now was continuing the efforts to create a, you know, the formal structure that was specific to the Coachella Valley. Greg did, and maybe I should have put this in here, but he is on, like I said, he is here. He did give a very good rebuttal that there still is a collaborative, cooperative regional approach. It's just more geared towards working more with the efforts of Riverside County and the continuum of care. Since then, I had gotten an email back from Barbara Poppy because I was sharing that with her, and she says that it seems like they're on the same track, but it's just a different track, but it's still with the same purpose, diversion and rapid resolution and trying to find CSUs, which are the crisis stabilization units for the homeless. And Greg, I don't know if you're there, if you want to add anything, or Conrado wants to add anything. Did that answer your question, Karen? I'm sorry.
Yes, and I appreciate that you reached out to Barbara Poppy and asked for her like expert opinion. Greatly, greatly, genuinely do appreciate it. I think it's something that other board members who were here, who commissioned the report, would also be grateful that that effort was done.
Yeah, she was okay with it. She just said it's that same path, but a different track. So she says she was glad, and she was glad to see that the county has kind of not been not as disenfranchised, or it's more connected now too.
Can I ask you what you meant in your third bullet point in this CVAG grant?
1, 2, 3.
Page 8 of my packet.
What we meant was that, you know, we were hoping with being a regional effort that there's always going to be organizations that are going to be that are dealing with the homeless that still need our own investment dollars, like Coachella Valley Rescue Mission, Martha's, Galilee Center, the city of Palm Springs was still asking for the mental health housing crisis. So regardless of which direction, and this is just my thoughts, regardless which direction CVAG and the Homelessness Committee are going, and through the county, there are always going to be some needs that are need to be, there are going to be gaps that the district through its own grant funding will be able to help and invest in for those organizations that are working with the homeless.
And then that's why the Martha's Village and Kitchen pending application makes sense.
Separate, yes. Okay. Right.
Okay, thank you. My last question on this was regarding the Youth Leadership Institute. Can you tell me a little bit more about the withdrawal?
Well, they had asked for some funding that was dealing with the biographies that they do and their other outreach that they do with the students. But because they got very much heavily involved with the Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative and actually doing the same thing with outreach and working with the youth, gearing towards the youth for the COVID-19, that they agreed that their efforts that they were looking at with the district was more now concentrated with the COVID, with the Equity Collaborative, and that they were fulfilling what they were planning on asking us for in this particular grant. Perfect. So it's more specific. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. They had like a very big hand in East Valley census outreach through their like written work. So I was, same thing, right? Like I was kind of concerned that they're pulling out because they had such a large impact on the census, and they're having an impact right now on just like vaccine information for people in the East Valley. Right. They're like a very local voice that they really would be.
They were recognizing the fact that the capacity of their organization was, you know, they were really fulfilling what they were working with the Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative with the money from the CARES and now from the Public Health Institute. They're doing a fantastic job. I'm sure Alejandro can attest to that, and so can Conrado, as part of one of the 8 organizations that are working on this collaboratively.
Okay. And then I guess I'll wait until we're in the foundation to talk about, to hear information from you all regarding the CVAG, if there's more to be shared. That's it. Thank you all.
Okay.
Okay. Does anyone else have questions?
Hearing none, we'll move on. Public comment?
We do. Where'd you go, Greg? It looks like he left. He had his hand right. Oh, there he is. Okay. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that Karen got her, or Director Borja got her question answered, but I'm here for that. I do want to, it's funny because I was actually on a call with Barbara Poppy the other day and we were texting back and forth. So she definitely sees that we're in line with where we wanted to go. And I wanted to point out too that when I was in the interview with district staff the other day, you know, Megan asked a great question about the efficacy or how beneficial was Barbara's report. And I think overall, just in the 3 years since it was done, 2.5 years, it really led us on the right path. And more importantly, as I said on that interview, is that I think it's led the county on the right path too, which is much more coordinated. And again, approaching stuff in a regional and collaborative approach. And then Don, if I just wanna expand on the money aspect, because it was a great point. Even working collaboratively and regionally together, you know, there's only certain funds, you know, whether that's through HUD or whether it's through state funding programs. And what we've really tried to do, and I think we've done a really good job over the last year and a half, is identified which different organizations are qualifying for that state, county, and federal funding, and then what needs to be augmented. So there would be sometimes where the district could chip in, especially in a place like Martha's where they're doing like the respite care that has a direct health impact to that. So that's all I have.
Thanks, Greg.
In old business, yes, one more question. In old business, are you all going to tell us about this Lift to Rise rental assistance program? It says information.
I believe we had it as a placeholder, Karen. I don't know if we have a representative from Lift to Rise who wants to say anything about it, but the latest that we know is that they are working to get more rental assistance, but we're not ready to share that information yet. So we hope that in the next 2 weeks, we will have that information.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Heather does have her hand raised. I don't know if she wants to, if she's gonna provide additional information.
Sure, thank you, Andrea. Yeah, just a quick update. What Conrado offered is accurate. We're working with the county and other folks to figure out how to leverage new incoming resources. And I think in the next 2 weeks for sure, we'll be able to be further down the road of understanding what's happening next. A couple of quick updates. The city of Indio and the city of Palm Springs have also allocated CDBG funds. So we're working through a batch of CDBG funding from the county right now. And we're also working, we'll then be working through the resources from Indio and Palm Springs. Just a word of note, there are about $5 million in applications on the waiting list right now on our side of the county, which is actually more than there are on the other side of the county. So the continued need for rental support is incredibly high. And just the last thing I'll flag is that we shared right before the holiday break, our data analysis of what we learned in the last 6 months from folks that are applying for rental assistance. And I'll bump that and send it back to Donna and Conrado, but really great read for folks on the call to understand the demographics of folks that are impacted. We continue to see that female head of households are two-thirds of applicants that are applying. Almost half of applicants are single parents, and 89% of those single parents are single mothers, and disproportionately the ways that housing insecurity is impacting communities of color. So we'll be happy to continue to share that data analysis, and then we'll be happy to share updates in the next couple of weeks. And always huge thanks to the district for making an initial investment that really allowed us to get the infrastructure up to operate this program.
Thank you, Heather. Chris. Would you mind sending that over to me, Conrado and Donna, when you get that?
Yes, of course. I will send an email now with our last three data reports.
Thank you. It's probably in there, but it's probably buried.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
So did anyone have any questions about the grant payment schedule? No? Hearing none, we'll move on to program updates. Community number one, community health needs assessment and health improvement plan. Is there any new information on this?
Megan was going to report on that. Report out.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, at the end of the year, we did wrap up the focus groups. HARC did 40 focus groups across the valley. It was virtual, but we had attendance from a good reach of people. So 40 focus groups with 205 participants with the community residents. And then we did the 8 focus groups with advisory council, which is made up of the nonprofits and other service providers in Coachella Valley, with 31 people. And right now they're doing a lot trying to analyze that data. It's, you know, qualitative data, so it's harder than looking at numbers. So they're trying to make a clear picture with that. And also working on a visualization component that we would be able to share once we're completed with our process with the community, that's a little bit easier to read. So just starting to get movement with that. This week, they're really heavily preparing for the strategic planning committee, putting together a PowerPoint. So it's very clearly presented to those board members about where they're at, the data they found, and our big next step, which is prioritization of the health needs. What toolkit we're going to be following to accurately and most efficiently combine all the residents' feedback, the advisory council feedback, and all the secondary data to put forth the top five health needs of the valley and how to move forward from there. So that will be the next big focus, is the prioritization.
Okay, thank you, Megan.
Karen's question.
I know it's very important for us to narrow down needs. And so I understand the need and the reason for us to have like the top five most important top priority health needs. Will it be possible to still get a list of as many as HARC is able to put together?
Yeah, the actual needs assessment report will be the tons of data that shows like everything that's gathered, broken down, you know, cities and demographics to show kind of everything that they've been gathered. And then they'll take a lot of the various health needs and subtopics and like put it all together. And so you'll see all the data and everything that happened, and then we'll pull the top five. So you'll see where all the other ones fell. And then the health improvement plan is where we dive into the five, the top five, but you'll still see all that other information in the health needs assessment itself. So you'd be able to look at what else was talked about and may not have gotten the top five, but still could be a priority and something that's talked about in the future.
Thank you so much. I've been talking to a couple of people about our efforts in the health needs assessment and how we're planning to use it in the future. And these folks are also interested because start of the new year, new funding, X, Y, and Z, they're also interested in getting information off of it and seeing how they can work more specifically in like the healthcare field with whatever information we gather. So I appreciate that it'll just be open, all of it, so anyone can come in and pull out and glean what they need to glean from our study.
Yeah, hopefully in an easy manner too. We're trying to do our best so it's understandable and it's readable for someone who doesn't want to sit down with the 200 page thing and a highlighter. So we're trying our best efforts just to see how that looks and looking at the best ways to share that and disseminate it to our partners and even residents if they're interested.
Thank you.
Are there any more questions regarding this information? Hearing none, we'll move on to grant funding requests. The consideration to approve grant number 1136, Inland Empire Ronald McDonald House Temporary Housing Service and Family Support Services. Who will give information on this grant request?
I will. So in front of you, you have in your packet, you've got the staff report, the grant application, the budget, as well as the scoring from the grants team and also our finance team. Ronald McDonald House, this is sort of a continuation. Again, they are serving around 20% of their clients are from the Coachella Valley. These funds will help offset the cost of the family stays that stay in the house program, also family support services, which is those that continue with wraparound services and case management for the families, and as well as a small amount for traveling for those that don't want to stay at the house but need to come back and forth. And Karen Hooper, the executive director, is on the phone or on the meeting if anybody has any questions for her. And if you have any questions, please let me know.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the funding request?
I motion to approve this grant for the Ronald McDonald House.
I second. Okay, so the motion is approved. The grant is approved and moved on to the board for approval. Moving on to consideration to approve grant number 1147, Alzheimer's Association Critical Program Support, $33,264. Who will be speaking on this grant?
I will again. This is to help support the Alzheimer's Association with the continuing the services that they're offering to their clients and the caregivers, helping to fund, partially funding their program and education manager, who also, this person does the care consultations for the families and the caregivers, as well as they have a 4-week comprehensive caregiver essential training program. It's every 4 weeks, once every month. So this will help offset the cost for that. I just blanked on her name. Help me out. What's her name? I'm blanking. Courtney, who is the executive director, is on the phone. If anybody is on the meeting, if anybody has any questions for her or us.
Okay.
I don't have any questions. I will say for our staff, it was alarming to read as everything else, right? COVID, how like exasperated, they didn't call it loneliness, but they called it, there's a term for it.
Isolation?
thank you, isolation. It's definitely been like news reports, I think outside of the Valley, of how isolation has contributed to higher rates of death amongst the older population. So just to the organization, thank you for the work you're doing. Thank you for just applying for our grants. We appreciate you having the confidence to reach out to our staff. And please continue working with us. I think your work is very, very important across the Coachella Valley. And also the last reviewer on this grant, also want to say thanks to all the reviewers for your notes. Your reviewer comments were very helpful. And not just this grant, all of the grants.
Does anyone else have any questions? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve this grant?
I motion to approve this grant.
I second. This grant has been approved and is being forwarded to the board meeting for approval. Moving on to the next item, number 3, consideration to approve grant number 1162, Cove Community Senior Association, DBA, the Jocelyn Wellness Center program support, $109,130. Who will be speaking on this grant? I know the information is in the packet.
Yes, just to sum up, but that those funds is partial. Part of it's supporting their mental health clinicians that will be providing behavioral health assessments and treatment plans, mostly through telehealth. And then also $50,000 to help target food insecurity through the Meals on Wheels. They had noticed that their Meals on Wheels request went from 30 to more than 40 residents that increased during the COVID, especially during the pandemic. Jack Newby, who's the executive director, I believe is in the meeting. If anybody has any questions for him, let's see. Yep, Jack there.
Does anyone have any questions, Karen?
I don't have questions, just more comments. Also very grateful for the work that you're all doing. I know that the Indio Senior Center has been participating with the Meals on Wheels program. And so I get to see from the local standpoint, they're constantly sharing like the larger increase of people needing meals, needing someone to visit them, needing to drop off materials beyond food. Just want to say again, thank you all for the work that you're doing for our very, very vulnerable populations, our older populations across the city. I did appreciate the statistics that you share from HARC. Actually, no, that was, yes, it was you. I did appreciate the statistics that you pulled out from the HARC report and shared on here. I think it's very important for us to keep getting updates on the most recent data available to us about the residents across the Coachella Valley. That's it.
Is there a motion to approve?
I motion to approve.
I second. Grant has been approved and it's being forwarded to the board meeting for approval. Moving on to committee member comments. Is there any committee member comments at this time?
None at this time for me.
Hearing none, we'll adjourn the meeting at 12:40 and move on to the district foundation meeting. At 12:40, I call to order the meeting at 12:40. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I motion to approve the agenda.
Okay. You second. Moving on to the meeting minutes from December 8th meeting. Is there a motion to approve?
I motion to approve.
I second. Moving on to public comment. At this time, comments can be made from the audience on items not listed on the agenda that are public interest or within subject matter jurisdiction of the district. The committee has a policy of limiting speakers to not more than 3 minutes. The committee cannot take actions on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on the agenda item when it comes up for discussion and or action. Are there any public comments at this time? Hearing none, we'll move on to new business. And since there is no new business, we will move on to old business. So we're moving on to number one, homeless initiative, CVAG. Government $700,000 of intent match for CV housing program. Who will be speaking on this?
Actually, it was covered in the district program committee meeting. There's really nothing more to add.
Okay.
Can I ask you what the next steps are here? What happened?
Well, this ties into, we asked them to come back. It wasn't a letter match, but for equity and transparency, we asked them to follow the protocol, as all grantees when asking for district funds or foundation funds, and to create a letter of interest what could lead to a grant application. So that's where we were back in the district with the grant application with under the funding request, where we highlighted everything that had we had our conversation with Greg, and that we'll be revisiting going back and looking to see what we could actually fund.
Thank you.
Okay.
Are there any more questions? Hearing none, we'll move on to Behavioral Health Initiative, A, Senior Program Officer Recruitment. Is there any new information on the Senior Program Officer Recruitment?
Yes, there is. We are actually exploring with a recruiter the possibility of finding a different pool of candidates using a recruiter who specializes in behavioral health professionals and also behavioral health professionals in administrative roles. I cannot remember the name of the company. I think it's MVP Consulting Group. I don't know if our board member Carmina Zavala knows anything about this company, but this is a company that has made many, many placements in the behavioral health arena, both in administrative roles and in licensed clinical roles.
I don't know if you can hear me, but I don't, but I can look into it.
Thank you, Carmina. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that.
Does anyone have any questions about the information provided?
No.
Thank you, Conrado. I'm happy this is moving forward. Moving on to number three, Coachella Valley Equity Collaborative.
Yes, I will speak on this. I don't know if Alejandro is on this meeting. He has much more detail of what we're doing. But I want to highlight a couple of things. Number one, the challenges that we are facing in our community, especially in those that live in the areas that are more affected by the outbreak of COVID-19, and I mean rural areas in Eastern Coachella Valley primarily, is significant. To give you a comparison point, typically, statewide, countywide, what we see is a positivity rate of about 22%. We have had events where the positivity rate has been hovering around 40%. So the speed, the widespread of this disease in underserved communities is something that is being underscored by the efforts that we have implemented in our most underserved areas. And one aspect that we're working with the Department of Public Health, we will be meeting with the Department of Behavioral Health, of mental health in the county, is how can we also address the mental health impact of these challenges in our community. We have seen families that are losing their parents, grandparents, their children. It is a horrible situation. It is like a war zone, what we're seeing, the number of people that have been infected and the number of people that we see increasing in the hospitals, in the ICU beds, and people that unfortunately don't make it is very high. Some of you are aware of the situation we have in Mecca with the Iglesia de Guadalupe, where we saw that the father was infected and many of the parishioners in that church have also been infected. The father being infected has had a deep impact in the psyches of the community. There are a couple of organizations that have peer education programs that are working with those communities to provide them with resources. I believe it is important to support and probably expand the support to peer educators and peer counselors, but it's also important to identify which organizations can provide clinical support for those families that are affected. One of the challenges that we all know we have in the Valley is that we don't have sufficient infrastructure for mental health and behavioral health. And we're monitoring, the state of California has an RFP that there are some organizations. We don't have a list of which organizations are applying to that, but we want to find out who applied from Coachella Valley and see how we can also help with things that are not covered under that grant. The work that we will be doing with the Department of Mental Health and Public Health here in the county will help us identify who needs what and if we are in a position to support those efforts. But it is important that those efforts are deployed in our communities. Also important to highlight, and I would like this to be included in the minutes, Andrea, is the Department of Homeland Security issued a guidance on essential critical infrastructures workers. And I have had conversations with CSDA and ACHD. This is an important guidance because it actually addresses that the district is one of those essential critical infrastructure. This is why we have been able to get some of our employees vaccinated against COVID-19 because we are at an increased risk of exposure to the virus. And I would like, Andrea, if you can add this document that I have to the minutes. And that will give us the opportunity to read this document. I will also forward this document to all of you. And finally, I think another important component of this effort that we are implementing in Eastern Coachella Valley is that as the county is moving into the vaccination effort, we are providing a more active hands-on role in providing access to COVID-19 testing. And the organizations that we're working with have trained their promotoras to do the actual sampling of the patients, and those tests are then sent to the lab. And in all fairness, it's moving even faster, more efficiently, as the community is taking more control over this process of administering the COVID-19 testing. And also, as we move into the vaccination effort, I will start having meetings with the Department of Public Health this afternoon to talk about how the district can support an immunization campaign for the public. We are completing phase one, in which healthcare workers that are in contact with patients that are at risk of being exposed to patients that have COVID-19 are being vaccinated. And that includes public health personnel, district personnel, EMT, community clinics, dental clinics, everybody who is at a higher risk of being exposed to the virus has been or is being vaccinated. But over the next couple of weeks, we want to start deploying these vaccines and making it available to other community members that are in a way that we can reach herd immunity and really curve the spread of the virus. Any questions?
Does anyone have any questions? I don't. Karen?
You're on mute, Karen.
Yes, yeah. Lots of questions and lots of thoughts about what you're talking about. One of the urgencies that I've seen in India is rapid testing. And I know we've talked about it. I know that we just haven't been able to get our hands on the exam. There's an urgent care right next to Kaiser in front of the hospital. Any day of the week, whenever they're open, the line wraps around the building. The day before Christmas, people were in line, wrapped around the building. They weren't 6 feet away from each other. So if someone does have COVID, they're standing next to people for a long period of time. The most common call that I get regarding COVID is, where can I go get a rapid test? Our families, for many reasons, poverty being maybe one to highlight, don't have the luxury of waiting in their homes days on end for their test to get back, for their results to get back. I hear what you're saying. We have known that the answer is rapid testing for a lot of folks in the East Valley. Just putting that out there, I think that needs, that conversation and that responsibility needs to be taken on. Right now, the folks that are doing it, at least in my community, is this urgent care center. I have heard from more than three people that they have gone twice, tested negative, end up going to one of the testing sites that takes longer, not a rapid test, and they end up testing positive when they wait longer, right? So we know that these are giving false negatives. It's giving people a false sense of security in our community, and the truth is, like, that is a blatant lie. So as I hear you speaking, right, and as I see what's going on in my community, it is just bonkers and bizarre to think that we still haven't figured out a way to inform people who are considering and are taking rapid tests. Like, this should not be the only measure of, this rapid test should not be the only measure that you take regarding knowing the status of your COVID virus. I'm not sure what to call it, right? But like,
absolutely.
So that's the first thought that comes to mind.
I do have something to comment on that here, and it is that the three community clinics we have in the Valley that we are familiar with, DAP, Borrego, and Clínicas de Salud del Pueblo, they all received their first pieces of equipment to do rapid testing, and they received some test kits. I don't know at this point when they're going to start deploying that, because they need to go through a phase in which they're calibrating their team, their machines, and all that to then have their protocol in place to start using it. But we are also aware of the high rate of positive, of false positivity in or false negativity in those tests that is misleading community members. And I think it will be important that those tests are not used in a public health setting, but rather in a clinical setting in which there is a conversation with a provider, that the test is used to assess a patient that has symptoms and that can guide the patient by talking to a medical provider of whether or not they should consider the result of that rapid test and the decisions that they will make for the purposes of quarantine and isolation. And also that those tests are used in conjunction with the PCR test to make sure that when we have a false negative, we double check that with the PCR.
That's like exactly.
Conrado, if this is Alejandro, if I may add a little bit to that. I actually went and took one of those rapid tests last week. You know, I'm having some home improvement done at my home. You know, I removed carpets and tiles, so I had a lot of dust. I had really bad allergies. But I just wanted to be sure. I had a runny nose and a little bit of congestion, so I went and did the rapid test there at Coachella at the Premier. It's called Premier Urgent Care Centers. There's one in Coachella, there's one in Indio, and I think they're also in the inland and the greater Riverside area. So I was there standing in line. It took me about 3 hours to get a test, and they only accept insurance. That is also a big barrier to our community. And for those that do not have insurance, it's $175 to get that test done. And the test results, you get them within 4 to 6 hours. I took it, I was one of the last appointments, so I got mine done right at, 5 o'clock, and I received my results the next morning. But in regards to the testing that we're doing in the community, Director Borja, we've become really efficient, as Conrado mentioned. The test results now with the curative have a 2 to 3 day window. I know there are other providers, here in the Coachella Valley through federally qualified house centers whose timetable is much larger or much greater than ours, looking into the 7 to 10 business day window. But ours, at the curative testing that we're doing in conjunction with the county, has a turnaround time of 2 to 3 days. We had some tests done on Saturday. We're already getting results back, today for some of the community members that participated in our testing event this last Saturday at Our Lady of Soledad in Coachella. So it's becoming really, really efficient. And I think the timetable of folks waiting at home, which is one of your concerns, I think is being reduced dramatically into the 2 to 3 day window, just because of the efficacy now of how fast we're doing the test and how efficient Curative is doing at processing all of these labs or tests in their labs.
I appreciate that, Alejandro. And your experience sounds really intense, right? Like, that's the other side of it. $175, 3 hours in line, 6 hours to get your results. Like, all of that just sounds really intense. I've seen those lines with like 30 to 40 people in them. Anyways, so that's it. Those are my comments on the testing. My other comments are on the vaccination. Someone on my social media threads asked like a younger population of people what they thought about the vaccine. Some of the things that were shared anonymously was, I don't know how we're going to get people for the second dose. I think public health messaging is not there. I think people are suspicious. I feel it's generally safe. Benefits outweigh the COVID deaths so far. Some people say, I've seen a lot of misinformation being spread in our community. I want to think that the worst that could happen is that the vaccine does nothing. And others say the vaccine should be widely distributed, get vaccinated. So I think one tiny one person in our community asking other people in their threads, the span of those who believe in the vaccine and the span of those who don't. Like, it's just these like odd mixed messages. So I just wanted to share from this like very small poll that someone took on the internet, who knows who replied to it, right? But I'm assuming it's people in the Valley, younger folks in the Valley. Just wanted to share that as we're thinking of a marketing communications perspective around the vaccination. I really do think it's important for us to partner up with some of these like smaller social media, local influencers, whatever you want to call them, right? People who have platforms on the internet and can get some of this information out there. I've said it before, and I really do think it works. Like those small media markets, those small like news reporters like Marcos Palma, who are out there and are like in our people's faces constantly. Those are the folks that we really should be leaning heavily on, and not just leaning on them, right? Paying them for their work to help us get some of this communication and marketing out there to people about the vaccine. Because right now, people are on both sides of the spectrum. I can't even imagine what the conversations were during the holidays for people that did get together, right? It must have been, what do you believe about the vaccine? ¿Nos va a ser bien o nos va a ser mal? ¿Te la vas a tomar o no te la vas a tomar, right? Like, just no one having a yes, we need to get vaccinated, and here's why, right? So, or no, whatever people decide. But those are my thoughts as you, Conrado, as you talk about vaccination, as you talk about our potential work in like the communication marketing realm. Just thought I'd share what I've picked up.
Yes, thank you. And we are, in fact, working on that front as well.
Okay. That's it.
All righty. Is there any more questions on this item?
Greg did have his hand up, but he removed it. Greg, are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Karen? I have a comment about the Premier Urgent Care. I took my daughters there. It took us almost 10 days for a result, and they did not do the rapid testing. And so I'm using more. I have patients that ask where to get tested, and I usually send them to the federally qualified health centers, or like what Conrado and Alejandro are doing, those testing sites, or MedPost is a good one too. So just if you have any, like if you have any members that are asking you, those are the people that I send them to, because they do have much rapid response times than that clinic.
The curative testing site at the Ranch Mirage Library is very fast and efficient as well, especially if you go to curative.com and register. I did, and they had two lines, one for appointments, one for non-appointments. Non-appointments, there had to be 50 cars. Appointments, there's two. I can zip right through and did what I had to do, and I got my results back within less than 24, over, a little over 24 hours. So they're pretty efficient as well.
Is there any concern with, you know, the publicity that the curative tests are, you know, negative or false negatives, and that? I was reading in the paper, I think today or yesterday, where LA County is stopping using curative tests
in
several other sites.
Andrea, I don't know if you can hear me. I can answer that.
We can hear you. Go ahead, Greg. Okay.
Actually, it's a great question, Chris. And it was just the supervisor actually brought it up at the board meeting today. What we're finding is that as with any test, you're always going to have some false negatives, false positives. Dr. Leung, who kind of heads up the whole testing program for the county, has been doing a lot of analysis over the last week and a half or two, and we are not seeing any change really in the false negative rate with the curative test. So both he and Kim Saratori, the public health director, are confident in the efficacy of it.
Yeah, it was brought up in the equity meeting today too, as well, that it all depends on, you know, if you when you cough, you have to cough hard three times. How you're swabbing around your mouth and your lips and things like that. If you ate or drank or smoked or have lipstick on or all kinds of things. So there's all these different factors. That's not so much the test itself. It's whether or not it's being you're self-administering it properly and getting enough of the saliva and all this other stuff up.
Yeah, it's more of user error than it's actually on the test itself. So it's more of that.
Thank you very much for the information. We'll be moving on to number four, addressing the district's role in advancing the district's role in addressing the healthcare needs of Black communities in the Coachella Valley. Number A, request for proposals. Is there any new information on this?
I guess I can do this. We put out the RFP again, and we have a due date of February 12th. We don't have any per se that have come in, but we have had other organizations that have asked questions about the RFP. And Megan's been monitoring that. And I don't know if there's anything she wanted to add to that.
No, I think that this time around, since we extended the timeline, I think there is some more interest. I think we're very thankful that people are looking at it now. It's still 4 weeks away. We've gotten two organizations that weren't interested in the previous time ask several questions that we've been able to respond to. So hopefully this time around we'll get some really some other solid applications and, you know, be able to work with the Desert Highland Gateway Estates and find out how best, you know, we can create this access point.
If we do not end up getting an application that can move on, are we willing to renegotiate, look at those 4 points that we want this organization coming in to provide, like primary care, things of that nature, or is that just like a no, we're not moving from there?
I think we will reassess after the
October
deadline is closed, but I believe that there are two FQHCs that are very, very interested in submitting an application, and we'll see what they say, if we need to modify our course. And also, I think that more importantly, we want to hear what the community members have to say about the challenges that we have been facing with receiving a good application for that community.
Does anyone have any more questions on this item or comments?
I do. Are we going to talk about the One Future Coachella Valley grant next or no?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we're moving on to that. Okay. So moving on to number B, expanding racial diversity in the health professional workforce, 100,000 One Future Coachella Valley Black and African American healthcare student scholarships. I see there's information in the packet and we'll be speaking on this.
Well, actually, when this was first approached, when Conrado first approached us with the board, it had been voted to provide, I just saw up front there, the $400,000 for the access to healthcare strategy and another $100,000 towards scholarships. Since then, we have spoken with One Future, and they have included in the packet a more detailed outline and timeline, and it has been determined that it a year is not enough and $100,000 isn't enough. So this is for information only, because we do want to bring forward to the board that we would like the board to increase the amount to 200,000 in a 2-year timeline. One feature is in the meeting, if they have any questions regarding their scope of work. But you know, it was basically that we wanted to bring forward that it's not just awarding a scholarship and that's the end of it. Here's $5,000, here's $10,000, go forth and get a career in healthcare. But the background and the infrastructure that is needed and is necessary to support the student from the time they actually possibly apply for a scholarship to when they receive a scholarship, to when they are in school, when they're out of school, doing internships, helping them review their applications. But there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes before a scholarship is actually given. This is the reason for a 2-year timeline and for increasing the amount for over 2 years for $200,000. Karen, you said you had some questions, and like I said, Sheila Thornton and Kim McNulty, Jackie Trujillo and Ernie Rios from One Future are on the meeting. If anybody has any questions or comments. And I don't know if Megan or Conrado wanted to add to this as well, because it was the three of us that were working with One Future in developing this.
Yes, I have a question. What of their own funding, present or future, are they planning to add in or supplement to these 200,000 2-year program?
Sheila, do you want to address that?
Sure. Am I?
You're unmuted. You're unmuted.
Excellent. So we really based this proposal on utilizing the existing infrastructure that One Future has, the sort of the scholarship and student success initiative that we currently run, in order to build capacity to build a fund to support this. So this, you know, you have two choices in a scholarship program. You can just disperse funding, take dollars donated specifically for a population of students or for a specific industry cluster, and get those, do marketing, get the students to apply and then award them. And then it just stops at that point. But that isn't the model for One Future. Our model is really to think about the full cycle and work the full cycle of students who are from underrepresented backgrounds to be sure that they end up optimizing the scholarship, optimizing financial aid, getting into their program, persisting enrolling, and becoming part of a cohort. So this is really viewed in as sort of two parts. The one component is we are going to use our existing infrastructure to find the students that are in Health Pathways, either in college now or are pursuing Health Pathways as seniors, and award initially, and you see that in the proposal. I think we dedicated $30,000 to doing that in the first year, and then using the second $70,000 and the advisory council and staffing time to develop a strategy to build a fund for that is a sustaining fund. And that would be in partnership with healthcare organizations and those who are interested in this particular aspect of our overall funding. And then I believe in our budget, we added information on the in-kind that we specifically would align to this set of deliverables. And I believe that was in the range of about $100,000, and I'm not seeing it right here. But that, what comprises that is the existing infrastructure and funding that we currently have dedicated to operating the portal for scholarship applications. We run two alignment teams that we believe are very much connected to this. One is called the Gents Alliance, and it's a young men's success initiative that all three school districts are involved in. So we're gonna use that alignment team to identify students who are potential candidates for this, for the work. And then the behavioral health alignment team, which is about building the behavioral health workforce. So those two alignment teams are part of that work is dedicated to building this pipeline in conjunction with what this contract lays out. We do not, if Karen, you were getting at the match, we no longer have the $1 million a year that we were awarded from the College Futures Foundation across a period of 10 years. We had a base for a match to be able to do one-to-one so that we incentivized fundraising. That grant ended about a couple of years ago. So we are now in the process of building our development efforts to build out that cap, that base, and be able to do the match in the future.
In your development fund that you speak of, is there any set aside time for Black scholarship, Black student, what did you call it? Support services, or no?
In our current operations?
In current or future?
Yeah, so in our current operations, we don't set it aside specifically for African-American students. Our budget covers the entire scholarship strategy across all three school districts for all students, and the criteria has been around income. So we have not to date specifically set aside funding that is dedicated to that.
Could you? Just curious.
Yes, because one of the areas that is emerging parallel to this is we have a couple of philanthropists who have given us seed funding and they would like to see built into a sustaining fund for scholarships for Coachella Valley youth, and specifically in healthcare. And so we are establishing a healthcare scholarship advisory council. And the goal with that is to raise in our initial phase $250,000 in the coming 2 years, and ultimately get to a place where we are able to award a significant proportion of the demand that we're seeing come through our pipeline, through the application process. So, and this year that's calculated at $1 million. That funding is equal to $25,000, and we're just establishing the advisory council to do that. So yes, we could dedicate, we could not do it in this year, but we could dedicate it in the 2021-22 academic year.
Specifically for Black students.
Yes. Yep.
My other concern, and really because I'm not extremely familiar with the operation, is the, let me see if I can find it. The application, or piece of information that I have in front of me, in the, let me see. There's a section on here of like how, it might be page 17 and on, how and where your One Future is planning to find students. The very alarming conversation about distributing funds to One Future is the very low number, the small percentage of African-American students already enrolled in their program. And so the reason why I ask, is there going to be like a very clear, specific plan, strategy written out for One Future to continue targeting African-American students, is because they themselves have said that there is a very low number, small number, they say, of participation from the African-American population in their program as is. And so I'm looking through it and I'm reading it, and I realized, right, that UCR has a Black student union, that Cal State San Bernardino here in the Palm Desert area also has like some kind of Black student union. And I don't see that work here. And so I'm just, I don't know what the word is, not concerned. I'm not concerned. I think the work that you do is needed, important, gonna continue long after, for many, many years, and the effects that you have already had in our community, we see it, right? We have young people who are returning to serve in the private and public sector, people who have received your scholarships and your student support. So with those sort of thoughts in mind, my question for the district, and as we take a look at this proposal in front of us, is like, what is the long-term financial, what is the long-term financial commitment to students that are African-American? When we first started having these conversations about these funds, I had shared with Conrado, right, like, this can't just be a one-time thing for us. This can't just be a $100,000, here you go, right? Like, do with it as you will. If this is, this should be a long-term investment, and it shouldn't just be on our behalf, right? If the district has said Black Lives Matter, Black support is important in our communities, Black health is important in our communities, our money should really be tailored to that long-term strategic change in our Black communities for our African-American members, right? And so as I'm reading through this, right, those are the two questions that I had. I think it's more for our staff versus One Future Coachella Valley. But the question also is for One Future Coachella Valley. What is your commitment? Will you put dollars behind it? Will you put staff behind it for a long-term sustainable support for our African-American students in the Coachella Valley, based off of what you have shared with us?
Karen, if I may, I can address that. Karen, I appreciate the question, because when we had this initial discussion, that's a significant issue that I believe is rationale for why we need to do this. And we need to do it in the way that we have done the with the infrastructure that we've built out in other strategic areas. The way what our traditional funding through One Future has been about socioeconomic level. And socioeconomic level is the key indicator across the three school districts of college going and college readiness and even persistence and ability to see, students' ability to see themselves in the future workforce. When we look at the data, we have first of all, 3% of the student population is African-American in the region. So we already have a very low percentage of students in that category. But when we look at the data and see that we have, we do not have the application uptake rate that we needed. So that was one of the first concerns that we talked about in this discussion. And that is why we built in this, the building of not just disperse the scholarships one thing, one time, and then we move on, because that's ineffective in scholarship giving. And we're not about just scholarship giving, we're about the whole pipeline. It is this grant, not the grant, but the contract is all about building infrastructure. And so when we were talking about this, we brought together a few key leaders and talked specifically about what's going on with African American students in our school districts, that they are not applying, that they have low college going rates. And so this is really bringing attention to it. And the concept behind this is not One Future has the expertise that we need. It is about One Future doing what we do to bring this community together, to identify what's needed to build a sustaining structure. And that's what that advisory council is all about. And the response we got from the African-American Parent Association group, Jarvis and Troy Strange, when we had our initial conversations about this, was students in Palm Springs Unified very specifically need more help navigating the college application and enrollment and scholarship application process, that we have not put dedicated attention to that. So what we've already found is that there are some very essential steps that we have not dug into deeply that could be addressed. And that is how we focus the attention on this. This is not just about One Future's proficiency. It's about building community proficiency.
And Karen, if I may add, the Desert Healthcare District has been involved in the healthcare workforce shortage and career pathways and pipelines basically since 2004, and has invested over millions of dollars into this development of these pathways. We helped with the first career healthcare pathway in Cathedral City High School. And now there's, I don't know how many, Sheila can report how many their health academies there are. We work with the intern program, those students. We actually had our own Desert Healthcare District healthcare scholarship program that was funded for probably 5 or 6 years. We are currently investing still with One Future in the development of the behavioral health career pipeline. You know, this has been a long project. This particular one's even been going on for 4 years. So the district has, in generalities, has really looked at healthcare workforce shortage, growing our own, bringing just the support, bringing them home when they to work back here in healthcare, working with the different hospitals, working with the different clinics and other healthcare providers in placing individuals. So it's been let's say 2004. So we're going on 17 years that I've been there that we have been investing very heavily in the pipeline, and now taking that expertise and the knowledge and what we have invested in the past, developing this out specific to African American students.
And so the other part of what I'm trying to get at least our staff to hear from me is that at the beginning of this meeting, we have Heather Vicona from Lift to Rise telling us that the African American population percentage is small, but those requesting funds from her is very large. And at the end of this meeting, we have One Future Coachella Valley telling us that their application rates are very small, right? And this is the money needed to do this work. And so I'm trying to help us figure out, right? Like, those two things are interrelated. We know that folks who attain higher education are very likely to attain jobs that provide health insurance for them, that provide them longevity in life, healthier living. We know that folks who receive higher education are more likely to vote, have higher incomes, live in complete communities, as they're called, right? Like, so I'm trying to make sure that as a Desert Healthcare District, we're understanding what Heather Vicona and Lift to Rise are telling us at the beginning of the meeting, and what One Future Coachella Valley is telling us at the end of the meeting, are one and the same, are consequential to one another, and we cannot, as the Desert Healthcare District, continue to just give out money without like really taking a look at race and this conversation that we ourselves have said is important to us, and we ourselves are continuing to build relationships with, right? Like, I'm trying to make sure that we marry these two ideals of who we think we are, ideals of who we want to become, because they're not separate. They're the same conversation with different actors, different vocabulary. But at the end of the day, I'm making sure that the investments that people are making, that we're making with people, that we're making with organizations, are not just for the sake of granting funds or for the sake of making us look good or for the sake of longevity or legacy or whatever, but they're for the sake of actually helping people have upward mobility in not just resources, but in health.
Yes.
And this is what equity is all about. This is why we're doing this.
I also have a question. Is this for Sheila? Sheila?
Yes.
This is Carmina. So I'm just curious, alongside with what Karen is saying, I'm just wondering how do we know that students that are receiving grants, that they are staying in the desert once they do complete or graduate from their program? I'm just curious about that.
That's the $64,000 question for universities and regions all over. But in our case, we have awarded 2,600 students. 64% of those students plan to live and work in the Coachella Valley. For those who have graduated and have a college degree, 51% live here and work here. The case in many, and in many regions, students want to get out. They want to get away from home. And in the case of healthcare workforce, oftentimes where students do residency is where they end up practicing. So our rate of return, 51%, we're relatively pleased with, because not only are we capturing, we want to do what's right for the student, what's right for this community in terms of a talented workforce, and specifically on health workforce, on health outcomes, build health workforce diversity as a driver of quality healthcare outcomes. To the degree that you can see in the timeline, the kinds of support services we're providing is really all about identifying those students who have the desire and need those doors open in order to get into the pipeline, but also to keep them, to build a network so that they have both a family network within the Coachella Valley, but also are tied to employment through internships, work-based learning, mentors. And that happens across our whole pipeline. And I believe that has a significant impact on their, not just interest, but their return rates. It is not the case that we do not expect that we will be able to get every one of these students back. That we've had that discussion pretty annually regarding whether or not, you know, is it a failure? If a student who typically might not have gone to college, but they get the support that's needed to go to college, end up in a healthcare program, and then they end up in a job in one of our students, actually an African-American student who works in Chalk Orange County, it's not a failure, but we do want to attract her back because we want her talent back here and her cultural competence. But there's sort of the both end. We have a significant number of students who are coming back. Those also who want to come back and are not finding the jobs that they need because they don't have a clinical degree, but they have a health sciences degree. So we're working very closely with them to see if we can't keep them on their pathway to graduate medical education.
Okay. No, thank you for clarifying that. I actually understand that because I'm actually someone who certainly grew up here in the Coachella Valley and went away to school and then coming back to give back. I'm currently doing a clinical internship as a clinical psychologist through the San Gregorio Memorial Hospital. So giving back. So, and often that's, like you said, it is at times unusual, but I'm glad to hear that 51% are being retained here.
And I would just add to it that we have placed 200 undergraduate juniors and seniors in college who are in health science majors in full-time paid internships during the summer. And one of them a couple of years ago who was involved in our behavioral health alignment team was at UC San Diego and said she saw internship opportunities regularly through UC San Diego and in that region. But the only one she had heard about in our region was the one that One Future does in the junior and senior year in college. So I think our region has a lot of work to do to be part of the pipeline, to offer students the opportunity to come back and actually get that work experience and connection to employers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So is there any more questions regarding this topic? Hearing none, we'll move on to grant payment schedules. I see the information is in the packet. If anyone has any questions, now is the time to ask.
One question of clarification, sorry. The second page on this grant payment schedule, we were told that we had to use this money before the end of the year. Give me an update if that's still true or not. The county, sorry, that was very vague. The county had given us this pass-through money. We had to use a certain amount of it before the end of the year, something about the CARES Act funding. Is that still true or no?
No, it's not. They have extended that timeline through the end of the year.
2021.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay. That's it.
Okay, so moving on to committee member comments. Does anybody have committee member comments at this time? I just would like to say that I thank you guys for all your hard work that you guys are doing, setting up these grants, helping the community, helping us succeed in our goal to let the community know who we are and what we do. I really appreciate all your guys' hard work. And if nobody else has committee member comments, I'll adjourn the meeting at 1:35.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you. Thank you all. Have a nice day.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.